Welcome to the BKB official podcast. And this week, delighted to be chatting to John Collier. And more importantly, I want to talk to him about this upcoming fight, which I think, despite there being world title fights, this could be a clash to savour. John, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are in the world listening, welcome to the podcast.
Well, I'm in sunny Wigan, mate, so it's very firmly good afternoon.
How are the pies in Wigan? They've got the best, by the way.
I'm not a pie man, mate.
They are famous for the pies.
I can't have bread, pastry and stuff like that because it sets my stomach off. That's how old I am.
Right, this fight upcoming with Errol McCallum. Yes. This has got all the ingredients to be fight of the night. Do you feel You feel it?
Yeah, I can feel that. I can feel... And I'll be perfectly honest, that's more due to Aaron's style than to mine. I think so, personally. Because Aaron likes to bring it, doesn't he?
He's a... front foot.
Yeah, he's a front foot, aggressive fighter. I watched his last fight, you were commentating, and you compared him to Mike Tyson in a way where he just, like, the second the bell goes, he's on you. Do you know what I mean? That was very much the Tyson style, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't let you rest from the minute the bell went until they'd either put you to sleep or the final bell went. So... yes, it has got the ingredients to set the auto on fire.
You're a totally different sort of fighter, though, aren't you?
Yes, I mean, I am on paper, but I can stand and have it if I need to. I'm not scared of holding my feet and standing my ground and backing someone up if I have to, but I don't want to get punched with a bare knuckle, Tom, on purpose. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Who on earth wants to get hit in the face, bare knuckle? Nobody.
Exactly. So if you can avoid them shots and still take your victory home, then so be it. So be it.
So it could be a clash of styles, but you've made it clear, whatever you have to do to win, you'll do.
Yeah, of course it will.
So sum up you as a fighter then. What's your style? Sum up your style.
In my early career, when I was in like me... early to mid-20s, I'd be much more front foot and aggressive. I'd like go seeking for the body shots. I'd like to work up and down, stuff like that. And not that I'm comparing myself in any way to the great Floyd Mayweather, but the way he adapted his style as he got a bit older.
Yes.
That's the way I think I've gone about things. Like I say, I'm not comparing myself in that way at all.
We're talking styles here, aren't we?
Yes, I'm just adapting my style now. If they throw two and miss and I throw one, I've still won the exchange. Do you know what I mean?
So with you, it's economy of punches.
Yeah, I try to be much more economical. I'm very much more defence-minded as I've gotten older.
Do you not think boxers generally, gloved or BKB, sometimes don't grasp that throwing lots of punches, if they don't hit, expands a lot of energy and tires you out quicker?
It expands more energy if you miss, personally, I think.
Yeah.
Because if you're throwing six shots and so you only land one of them and then the guy rolls and catches and parries and slips and counters them, you've wasted 20 calories worth of energy when you could have just wasted 1 calorie worth of energy. Do you know what I mean?
It just makes sense, doesn't it?
Of course it does. You know.
So you will do, because you only had one BKB fight, but you've been in the ring hundreds of times and still in the ring with your gym and stuff. So let's just talk about your last fight, Zvetch. You come into the ring and, unlike a lot of BKB fighters, you bring a lot of boxing technique and technical expertise.
Yes, I try to. I said this on a previous podcast when I first signed with BKB. I don't mean it disrespectfully in any way to any BKB fighters, but they just seem to go to brawl. I mean, there is obviously some technique behind it. There is some boxes in there, but they just seem to want to brawl. But going back to my previous point that I made a few minutes ago, why? Why get hit on purpose? If you're standing in range all the time and throwing shots all the time, the laws of averages dictate that something's going to come over the top and catch you. If you're in someone's range constantly, you're enticing them to throw. And if you're not willing to step out of range or roll or slip or parry or whatever, you're going to get hit. And like you've just said yourself, and like I've just said, no one wants to be hit with a bare knuckle. You know, we might enjoy the combat and the fighting and stuff, but bloody hurts, Tom.
I'll take your word for that. Technically, though, the thing for you that I noticed, your footwork is very important to the way you fight.
Of course it is. You wouldn't build a house on crap foundations, would you? You know, so there's no point having Mike Tyson dynamite power in your right hand and having Wayne Sleep feet underneath you. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
Step that firm base and drive it all through from your hips and be ready to move and be ready to step off to the side and stuff if you need to. So you've got to be on your balls of your feet with a nice firm base. I drill it into fighters who I train all the time. Feet.
We're getting better technical boxers now at BKB. We're getting more use of the feet than we ever did.
Yeah.
But I think also we're getting fighters who have a range of shots, not just the big right hand. We got a range of shots. We got a jab. We're seeing a better use. And you mentioned it earlier. We didn't see hardly any of it, but we see that use of the body shot, which can be debilitating. It can
actually. Of course it can. You know, if you meet someone like me who's had 100 odd fights, you can punch me in the face for 6 months and I'll just stand there and look at you. You know, land a perfectly timed liver punch on anyone. Professional fight. Look at when Bernard Hopkins knocked out Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah,
it won't gold medal at the Olympics. You're not telling me he'd never taken a body shot before. And De La Hoya Bernard Hopkins just perfectly timed it, dropped it in under the elbow, and that was that.
Game over.
That was all she wrote.
So, just while we dwell on the fight, because it's a great bill, by the way, it's a fantastic bill.
It is a good show. It is a good show, to be fair.
Aaron, and full credit to Jim and Joe for the matchmaking. It's great. What about Aaron? I mean, you mentioned Aaron, he's on the front foot, but he's a tough cookie.
Yeah, he is tough. I'm not gonna knock him out. I'm under no illusion that I'm gonna go in there and by the end of the second round I'm gonna really start hurting him, really start getting to him. That I'll be perfectly honest, I'm an honest, straight up kind of guy. That's not gonna happen. I'm gonna have to outbox him. I'm gonna have to outbox him and move and make him miss, make him fall short just that little bit and stuff like that.
That's the beauty of this, is that he's going to want to knock you out.
Of course he is. And he's got the power to do so as well. He's a very, very powerful, short, well-built, not, I don't mean that disrespectfully, but he's a short, stocky, well-built kind of guy, you know, and he uses that to his advantage, which is what you're meant to do. If you are a smaller fighter, stay small.
Absolutely. But he comes into the ring now, fitter than he ever did.
Yeah.
And I can see, I don't know who's working with him. I mean, but you can see he's trying to have that little bit more of the boxing technique. So he's working hard at his game.
He is. Anyone in any field who's working hard at being better at something deserves respect. And he's got my respect anyway.
Yeah. So let's go back. So that's the fight. It's December the 3rd. If you can't get a ticket, pay-per-view. Fight.tv, because I promise you, there's some great fights, but this is one you won't want to miss, because this is a fight between two honest guys, and it's got all the ingredients to be the fight of the night, trust me. Now, go back a bit. Let's go back. You've had over 100 fights, haven't you? Glove fights.
Yeah, glove. So yeah,
tell us a little bit about how that all started, you know, the fight career started, and where were you boxing, and all that sort of stuff.
So I started boxing when I was about 12. For a relatively short period of time, really. And there's obviously your teenage years when you're a northern lad growing up in Wigan, girls and smoking and drinking and drugs and all that getting involved, So I fell off the wayside a little bit. But I always had a punch bag in the garage and I always had mates who could hold pads and stuff like that. So I was always knocking about, but it was never serious, you know. It was just took a look after myself in a tough northern working class town, basically. But I only really knuckled down and started competing and found my feet with this daft sport when I was about 25, really. So I crammed all them 100 glove fights, I crammed them all into about 8 years.
Good grief.
So I was a busy man, but I was always fit, I was always active, I was always learning.
Did you win most?
Uh, probably won 75% of them, something like that. 70, 75%.
70 odd, it is 70 odd, yeah.
Yeah, I did all right. I wasn't the best in the world, but I wasn't the worst.
Did I always wanted to ask boxers, were you the sort of opponent that nobody really fancied? Do you know what I mean? Not that they couldn't beat you, but they thought, I know what I'm in for here.
Possibly, yeah. There was a few who swerved me, so to speak. But going back to what I was saying about the bullishness of youth, you're so powerful when you're young. And I don't necessarily mean power as in you can hit hard and you can lift loads of weights. You're just young. You're just powerful. You know, it's like a brand new car, isn't it? It's going to be better than a 20-year-old Ford Fiesta. You know, it's just, you're just so powerful. And obviously, I was relatively young on the unlicensed scene, because obviously a lot of them were ex-pros and stuff who were just finishing off the end of their career. Mm. So you didn't want my pressure on you. You didn't want that kind of... I could dig a bit as well when I was in the unlicensed. You know, I've slowed down a bit now. I don't really look for power. But maybe a few kept out of my way, yeah. But I'm not... You know, I'm not Mike Tyson. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm sure that they didn't keep out your way, but they'd think, oh, God, this is a fight. I've got to, I know what I'm going to get. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you knew you were in a fight.
That's when my point.
When you touched gloves with me, you knew I wasn't going to run away from you. Do you know what I mean? If I put 8 weeks of my life into something, I wasn't going in there thinking, let's just tap our way through this, get paid and go home. And I still hold that same mentality to this day.
Why never pro, though? Why didn't you turn pro?
I just wasn't quite good enough, Tom.
Simple as that.
Yeah, I just wasn't quite at that level. I was very good at the level I was at. Because I used to spar with pros, and I did consider it when I was about 27, just having a little shot at it. You know, at that age, I wasn't going to win world titles or anything, but I just thought, along the, you know, they have shows 2 miles that way at Wigan, Robin Park Arena.
Yeah.
They have pro shows there. I thought, maybe I can get on there and have a little, you know, a little few journeymen and just make a little bit of money and just enjoy the back end of my career. But when I sparred with the pros, I could hold my own, but I just thought, it's just that little level above me. Do you know what I mean? It's just, you know, it's just an extra couple of rungs up the ladder and I'm not quite good enough. So, and I think it takes a lot to admit that, to be honest.
No, exactly the same. Exactly the same with me in football.
Yeah.
If you're honest and you look in the mirror, not good enough.
Yeah.
You have to beat that up.
As long as you can look yourself in the mirror and know that you've been honest with yourself, then that's all right.
But in boxing, though, you can go. In boxing, you can, I suppose, go in and fight and be a professional and always be an opponent. If your mindset's, I want to be a contender and you're not good enough to be a contender. And that's probably the decision you had to make.
During the back end of my unlicensed career, I was very much the opponent because I was just solely fighting for the money. Probably the last 20 fights I had before I retired, apart from my last fight, I was just... Let's just get it done with this. Do a couple of weeks hitting the pads and a little bit of sprinting. Let's just go in. And it's a quick 200 quid. I'll only be there 20 minutes. Now we're gone again. You know what I mean? But my last glove fight, I put my heart and soul into it. And I won that. I won that last one. That was when I retired from gloved.
Yeah, you're right. You did it for the money. And
yeah, of course.
Anybody that fights without getting paid must be crackers.
Yes. I mean, the only reason you'd fight without getting paid with probably amateur boxing. If you're a young kid and you've got a goal at the end of it, you know, you wouldn't
like
be
an aim.
30, yeah. Yeah, you won't be 35, 36 going into the amateurs just to have a goal. You might as well go do the unlicensed and get paid for it. do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Robert McCracken always said, I'm not punching anybody if I ain't getting paid for it.
And
it's a great philosophy. So when did that, you sort of evolve into John Collier the trainer?
I was always called, I had a couple of young lads when I was boxing alongside boxing and competing. There'd be about three or four of us that always trained together. And I was just always viewed as coach. It was never decided in the group chat one day, right, I'm coach. It was just like, well, John's more experienced. John's good at holding the pads. John knows strength and conditioning. John knows all this. So we'll follow John. Right, we're in the gym, 9 o'clock Tuesday, blah, blah, blah. So, and then I got started up where I am now at Majestic Gym in Wigan at Pemberton. I just started taking the boxing classes there and it just evolved from there. Now I've got a stable of about 15 fighters, something like that.
Are they pro fighters?
No, just unlicensed. And a couple I worked with a couple of lads who did the amateurs as well.
So you sort of evolved into a coach. No formal training. But no. You learnt on the job then?
Yeah, exactly. I learnt on the job. I study boxing and I study the sport a lot, you know, and I just think I take a lot of things with me that I listen a lot to the commentators. When you're listening to Roy Jones Jr. and Paulie Malignaggi commentating, you can't not learn something.
Absolutely.
You've got to be an absolute idiot if you're watching a fight with Paulie Malignaggi commentating and you're not learning, because he just sees them little nuances that fighters do and little things and stuff like that. So, but I watch the sport religiously. I watch a fight every night, whether it's a fight I've seen a million times or whether it's a fight I've never seen. I watch a fight pretty much every night.
We've got a lot in common. I'm pretty much the same. I'm YouTubing old fights and always looking at boxing, always looking to see and learn.
I love YouTube. Yeah. It brings back so many memories, and it's also a massive tool. If you use it correctly, it's a massive tool.
Unbelievable.
To benefit you.
And you realise, when you look at it often enough, you think, I made a good decision realising I wasn't good enough.
Yes. Exactly. I was perfectly honest with myself.
Your training, we'll talk about BKB training in a minute, but who was your favourite fighter? Who were the people you looked up to?
Ricky Hatton. And I was lucky enough to spend a couple of years up at Ricky Hatton's gym alongside Ricky and Blaine Eunice and all them lot. I used to spar with I never sparred with Ricky. He was well and truly in retirement when I was up there. But spar with a couple of pro fighters up there, Denton Bissell, Don Brown. He was a guy with Simon Mayweather Promotions. He's sadly no longer with us. Sonny Upton, Paulie Upton, Upton Brothers. That's where I kind of learned, you're not quite good enough, John. You know, that when I was sparring with them guys who come through the amateur system in Team GB and stuff like that, that's where I learned you're not quite good enough. Like, you're good at the level you're at, but that's the level you're at. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But great fighters don't always make great coaches.
No.
And sometimes it's the fighters who weren't quite good enough that make the best coaches.
Yes.
You feel that?
Yeah, and Angelo Dundee's a prime example.
Exactly.
There's a couple of others. A couple of others knocking around. Angelo Dundee is probably the best example, though. Freddie Roach. Freddie Roach is another one. Trainer of the year 6 or 7 times. And I believe he's pretty much got a losing record in boxing.
Was it Freddie Roach they asked, they said, what makes a great trainer? And he said, great fighters.
Yes.
It's pretty simple. So there you... So the BKB, I suppose, your involvement in that came because you were in the corner a lot, seeing you in the corner at BKB shows.
Yes.
How did that all happen? Talk us through the evolution of that.
Daniel McGraffin, the thorn in my side. I've known Dan about 7 or 8 years, and he came to me when he started boxing. His first ever fight was under me with the, don't know if you've heard of it, the ultra white collar boxing.
Yeah.
So it's head guard, 16-ounce gloves, you raise money for charity. That was his first ever fight, and he was trained with us at Majestic Gym. Then he disappeared. He went up to Blackpool. His personal life dictated, he went up to Blackpool for various reasons. And when he came back, it was mid lockdown, and we were probably June, July of 2020, so we're mid lockdown. And he messaged me and he said, I'm signed Bare Knuckle. It was signed with a different organisation then. He said, I'm signed Bare Knuckle. I'm back in Wigan. I need a coach. What's the crack, Mr. Collier? And I said, come to my house and we'll have a chat. We'll see what your plan is. And then we just took it from there. He's had the British and the European with a different organisation. Then obviously we fought the gentleman that is Daniel Lowell on the BKB 26 and won his world title. So that's how I ended up involved with BKB.
Well, he's the move from one organisation to the best as far as we're concerned. And
yes.
You've gone from a corner man to fighting.
Was
that a big decision, or was that something did somebody advise you to do it? How did that happen?
It's weird for me because even though I'd retired, I was still always in the gym. So if I was doing a PT with one of the lads, he'd message me and say, after PT today, can we do a few rounds sparring? And I'd just say, yeah, fine. So I was always sparring and stuff anyway. And Dan, I was Dan's main sparring partner for Daniel Lobo. So I was already relatively fight fit. And then I spoke to Jim and Joe at the BKB 26, which was in June, wasn't it? And then he just said, right, I can put you on the 3rd of September. And I'd not really decided at that point, because Jim just said, I'll put you on the 3rd of September. And I just went, oh, all right. That was it, really.
So that was it. Jim decided.
Yeah, I thought, Jesus, I better get in the gym then. So,
but it wasn't the biggest of transition, because you've been in the ring with your sparring and your training.
Yeah.
So ring rust was never going to be a problem, but there was a shock to come where it's bare knuckle.
Yes, I did a thingy with an interview with George Glinski yesterday, and we was on about this. And he said, how did you feel? And I said, I'll be honest, I said, I don't feel like I've taken a full bare knuckle punch yet, because respectfully to Luca, he didn't really land much, and when he did land, he didn't want to step in. If you watch the fight back, I've watched it a couple of times, I get him early with a left hook, and after that he didn't want to engage. After that, he really stayed on the outside, so he'd be throwing his shots, but he'd already be on the way out as he was throwing the shot. So personally, I don't feel like I've taken a flush bare knuckle yet. So, I mean, Mr. McCallum will soon sort that out, won't he? Within the first 10 seconds, I should imagine.
But I can't. A lot of people fancy BKB, right? Lots.
Yeah.
There's a lot, do it, and don't come back for a second fight.
Yeah.
Now, you've said, right, you're back.
Yes. I was good anyway. I'm furiously stubborn. So if I've said, right, I'm going, when Jim said, like, 3rd of September, I thought, right, I'm in then. When I spoke to Jim, I said, I'm not in this, just to make a few quid, and just to say, I boxed at the O2. I don't give a monkeys if no one's watching. I want to win the world title. That's genuinely what I'm aiming for. So if no one's watching, whatever, I'm not bothered. I'm not here to be a superstar. I'm here to win fights for me.
So you're not. So, whereas in boxing you can be an opponent,
yeah, here,
you want to be a contender.
Yes, absolutely. And I do feel a good performance against Luca, which is what I put in, put me kind of in that bracket, because they thought, oh, he can do a bit, this kid. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm at the wrong side of 35 these days. I'm 37, but I don't think it matters. I think it's. Robin Black said it perfectly on the commentary. Smart beats heart a lot of the time.
You know, 100%.
Yeah. There's fighters in there who hit harder than me, and there's fighters in there who are faster than me, but are you smarter than me? Do you know what I mean?
That's a great way to put it. You know, I think if you've got heart and smart,
you're
a world champion.
You can be. You certainly can be. You know, the world champion of my weight is Barry Jones, which is absolutely marvellous, isn't it?
All the best.
Thank you very much, sir.
Have you thought about moving weights?
Yeah, I'll go down to 64 kilo.
Weight's not a problem, because you're naturally fit, aren't you, being in the gym all the time?
Yeah, I'm naturally. I fight at 76, but when I spoke to Jim early on, I said I can go down to about 73. I said I can easily make 73 for the same day weighing. I walk around at about 79. So just a couple of days eating fruit, watching what I'm drinking, and I can drop down to 76 easily enough. I was 79.2 yesterday morning. So,
yeah. Well, you've mentioned your age, and, you know, we see boxers sometimes, fighters, get into the ring at 24 and they ain't fit. But you've got in at 37, you're very fit.
Yeah.
And surely that's the key.
Because I apply myself. Like, I've been in the gym this morning. I've done my pad work this morning. I've come home, had my tea, sort the house out, and then I'm back up. I've got a run. I've got my strength and conditioning tonight. I've got another hour and a half training to do tonight. That's pretty much every day.
So that lie detector, then, the ring's not going to catch you?
No. What was it, Mauro Ranallo, who said it on a short time? He said, this is the hurt game, but the letters H-U-R-T are also in the word truth. And that's where you'll find the truth in the squared circle. So no,
absolutely. The biggest lie detector in the world. So tell me then about Dan McGrathie. What did he say when you said, I'm going bare knuckle?
He was giving me a nudge for about 6 months.
Right.
When he signed to BKB, because he wasn't happy at the previous organisation, he said, these are good guys, you know, if you're thinking about coming back. And at that point, I wasn't thinking about coming back. I was about 90 kilo. Do you know what I mean? I was still fit and I was still knocking about, but I was still, you know, if I wanted a tube of Pringles, I was having a tube of Pringles. Do you know what I mean? And then he just said, you should have a go. And then I came down to the O2, obviously, for Dan's world title bout when he won the world title. And I just thought, go on, let's give it a bash. Then Jim came in the changing rooms and Dan said, he's a good boxer, him, get him on. And I was like, well, if you want, put me on, I'll go on. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah. How's Dan now, by the way, in his rehab?
He's healing up. He's healing up all right. I think I spoke to him one day with today, Tom, Monday. I think I spoke to him on Friday. He's weight-bearing again. He's still in a boot. He's still heavily bandaged, but he's no casting at the minute. He's just in a boot now and he can start weight-bearing. He's hoping to have the boot taken off on, I think it's the 5th of December, his next appointment. They're happy with how the bones healed. They're just keeping an eye on the ligaments and the tendons after the break. But they seem pretty happy with everything. So he seemed in relatively good spirits the other day, being as irritating as ever.
What does that sort of injury do? Does it put him back? Or can he come back into the ring as he left it? Well, how does that work, that sort of injury? Because,
well, I don't know if you know much about Dan's background, but he's also a very good DJ and a very good producer of music, of bounce music, which is little out of my taste, I'll be honest, mate. It's just noise to me.
Me too.
Yeah, it's just noise. But Dan in that field is meant to be very, very good. Well, he's very, very good.
Mixing and scratching, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, my missus into all that music and she says it's good stuff that he's putting out. So he's focused himself on that in a minute. Rather than just being sat at home watching the TV, he's on his laptop and he's producing and stuff. So I'm just glad he's still focused. Hopefully he can transition that focus into his boxing. If he decides to come back, it's up to him. He's not under any contract with me. Do you know what I mean? If he wants to come back, he can come back. The gym door's always open for him.
Knowing him only a short time, I got the feeling he'll want to come back just to prove something to himself.
I think he wants to rematch Bellamy, if nothing else, if that's all he does. If he just has one more fight and rematches Bellamy, because if he just sticks to the plan, I'm not going to go too deep into it because I don't want to start slagging him off, but he just sticks to the plan, he'll iron Bellamy out in two rounds. Because he dropped it. He dropped him within 30 seconds. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. And you don't, you know, plans are there for a reason.
Of course they are.
You know, and if you don't follow them, then you face the consequences. We talked about Dan McGraffin and his music. And like I saw you're a bit of a guitarist and singer.
I am, mate. I do enjoy my guitar playing. You can see behind me there the Oasis memorabilia.
Well, I thought I was the only one in the BKB organisation that played.
No, I've played. I've played longer than I've boxed. I've played guitar since I was about 9 years old.
Yeah.
So singing and writing songs and being in bands and stuff like that. I love it all. So it's good to, it's like a downtime thing for me.
It's a great therapy for me.
Yes, it is.
We had the same at work. We had a band at work and we played a couple of big venues and then somebody left the radio station so we couldn't train and rehearse and stuff. But we had great times doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And with Ian Danter, I've done a few singles, which, you know, for football clubs and stuff.
Okay.
I've enjoyed, you know? But every so often I just get my guitar out and it just gets me away from the madding crowd, mate.
That's all I do now. I play at home and then every couple of months I do like the local
open mic.
It's called the Old Courts. It's the bailiff bar of the Old Courts. It used to be the court house in Wigan. Now it's converted into like a function rooms and bars and stuff. Every couple of months they have me on there and I just do an Oasis set on a Sunday afternoon. And
you're an Oasis fan, aren't you?
Massive Oasis fan, mate. Yeah, they soundtracked my youth. So, and they're still here today. Noel Gallagher's put a new single out today, funnily enough.
To be fair, I think they're the best ever Beatles tribute act I've ever seen.
Yes, a lot of people say that. I think they sound more like The Who and The Rolling Stones, personally, but Slade, The Who, The Rolling Stones.
Listen, I'm joshing. They're a good
band. I know what you are,
I've seen
man.
Them live as well, both of them together, and they are sensational. And
they are.
But they're sort of songs that cover a wide span of age groups as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, when I do them little gigs, there's people there who are 16, 17 years old singing Champagne Supernova, and there's people there who are 50 years old singing Champagne Supernova. It's the power of music, isn't it? It just transcends.
It's absolutely right.
It doesn't matter how old you are. You know, it doesn't matter how old you are. If singing Don't Look Back in Anger with your mates means something to you, then it means something to you.
Yeah, that's the one we did. That's when we did all the covers. That's the one we did,
Don't Look Back in Anger.
But I love the one, I think you did it. I think I saw a video of you doing the Royal Family theme.
Half the World Away.
Half the World Away. I love that tune, to be fair. Simple.
Well,
simple
song. When I play that song, I always say, did you all have a good time for the Platinum Jubilee? And it goes, yeah, go. Well, here's a song about the real Royal Family. And then I play Half the World Away.
Have you met the Gallaghers?
I've not, mate. I've not been that lucky, unfortunately. I've seen them. I've seen Oasis 3 times. I've seen Noel 5 or 6 times. I've seen Liam a few times, but I've never met them.
Very talented guys. Pity they don't get on.
I know, they don't get on. I haven't got a brother, so I can't relate. I've got a sister and we get on just fine. So if my brother was all over the internet calling my missus, I'd probably want to punch his head in as well. So
I think that's a fair comment. What about your own family? When, you know, I mean, we know when you're not boxing or training, you're playing a guitar. Family life, what's family life for you?
I have a missus, been with her about 5 years, 5.5 years, Kath. I have 3 kids that I bring into it. She has 3 kids that she brings. So we've got none together, but we've got three. She's got 3 from a previous relationship, and I've got 3, excuse me, by 3 previous relationships. So don't judge me. I see all my kids, pay for them all.
I've been married 4 times. I'm not going to judge anybody, trust me.
Yeah, I see all my kids, I pay my way. So,
Do they come to BKB?
No. I don't think they've seen me spar and stuff in the gym, but they've never seen me fight. I don't know if I'd ever, you know what, Tom, it's not so much about the fighting side of it. It's the logistics of it. Getting my kids down to London and making sure someone's there to look after them. Because obviously I'm, for want of a less cliche thing, in the zone. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to hear, Daddy, can you charge my phone up for me 15 minutes for a ring walk? Do you know what I mean? I love my kids to death and I'll die for them tomorrow, but if I'm 15 minutes for ring walk and I don't want to hear, Daddy, I need a drink. Do you know what I mean?
and sure as hell it would be.
Of course it would. They don't understand that you're having your hands bandaged ready for going to war.
So tell us about, what has this opportunity with BKB, what does it mean to you? What has it done for you? What has it done for your life?
It's rejuvenated me love for the sport again. Granted, it's not exactly glove boxing, but it's still boxing. It's still boxing to me. It still puts me in the gym. Still puts me in training camp, which I love. I'm very much a creature of habit. I'm a little bit OCD. I'm a little bit, you know, maybe I'm a little bit autistic or something in a way, but I just love routine.
Yeah.
Like over there, I've got it written on the cupboard. Me training. I train twice a day, every day apart from Sundays, where I only train once. And I've got it written down what I'm doing. Strength and conditioning, afternoon is pads, stuff like that. I like that, and I like... You shouldn't just do this all the time. People should do it all the time, but I like eating healthily. I just think, well, I don't need to be 76 kilos, so I'll just have some Pringles. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I think, well, I have to be 76 kilos, so I'll just have a chicken salad today and I'll have a rice.
You're a very disciplined fighter.
Yeah, very, very much. If I'm doing it, I'm doing it. If I'm not doing it, I'm not doing it. Do you know what I mean?
Have Jim and Joe indicated that, you know, what could be at the end of it, you know, with say a win against McCallum, for example, would you be looking for them to think seriously about you and some sort of title shot?
When I get through the McCallum fight, which I am fully confident I'll win, I want the winner of Reece Murray versus Tony Lafferty, which is the fight for the British at my weight on that card.
That is insane.
And I'm not a guy for calling people out. I'm not going to start, you're going to get it, you boy. You know, I'm not one of them kind of fighters, but that's my...
You don't trash talk, do you? There's no trash talk.
No, can't be bothered, Tom. I just can't be bothered. You know, you get guys like Eric Olsen who plays a character, do you know what I mean? And I'm not getting into a war of words with Eric. I've done it a few times and me and Eric are cool now. I'm not getting into a war of words with him. But you get guys like Eric who play that character who like to trash talk, and if that's the way they go into fights, that's fine.
He is the original pantomime villain.
Of course he is, and that's how he goes about things, and that's perfectly fine. I'm not like that.
Not for you.
I'd rather fist bump you. We'll go to war and we'll fist bump again 6 minutes later.
And then go in the bar.
Yep, yep. Whoever would loser gets a pint in.
But it is a business though where, and I've whether it's glove boxing or BKB, I'm not a lover of trash talk. Never have been.
No, I don't get it.
I don't see there's any need for it, apart from Muhammad Ali.
Well, he was the greatest at it.
And there's nobody better.
No.
Nobody better. But he did it with a smile.
Yeah, he was...
There was never any real genuine animosity, apart from when the German I can't remember, or Swede, was it? Who wouldn't call him Muhammad
that
Ali.
That was it.
Call him Cassius.
And he was hitting him going, What's my name?
That's the one.
Punching him, yeah. Because he didn't knock him out on purpose, did he?
No, he said he wanted to punish him.
I think he stopped him about the sixth or seventh round. But he said for them rounds, I was just punishing him. What's my name?
Have you been in the ring where you wanted to punish somebody? Not beat them, not win, just punish them?
In all my fights, I've only ever had one fight where I genuinely didn't like my opponent. I won't name him. Personally, because I lost the fight very, very marginally. And not he got me. He was the first person to ever knock me down. He knocked me down with the left hook. And I lost the fight on a split. That's the only time. And that, but looking back on it a few months later, I realised why he knocked me down, because I was emotionally invested. I was charging at him. I wanna kill you, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm much more calculated.
You've led yourself into the next question, which was about sometimes trash talk. Sometimes you don't fight the fight. You fight the occasion. And I think sometimes you've got to fight the fight.
These combat sports aren't personal. That Aaron McCallum hasn't done anything to me. He hasn't hurt my family. He hasn't disrespected me in any kind of way. It's just a fight. My dad said to me, actually, my dad, when they made the fight and he announced it, my dad said, Aaron commented on a couple of your videos. He's got a lot to say about it. He's a nice guy. And I said, and he's a nice guy as well. So it's just business. It's just business. For them 6 minutes, he's my enemy and I'm his enemy. And as soon as that final bell goes, it's Aaron and John again, and we'll just be friends again. Hopefully. I hope we will anyway.
Isn't that the way it should be?
Of course it is. It's just a game of chess that hurts. That's all boxing is.
Talk us through that moment that you think, right, you've heard the last fight's over. It's your ring walk time. What do you go through? What emotions do you go through then? Are you reminding yourself of what your job's about? Or is it, what do you go through in that walk to the ring? Once the bell goes, that takes care of itself. But that bit when you walk into the ring and in the ring.
It's never, ever bothered me, Tom. I've never, ever been a nervous fighter. I've never been a flashy fighter. I was never bothered about a ring walk or anything like that. For a lot of my fights, I didn't even pick ring walk music. And I just think it won't matter. People don't remember you for your ring walk unless you're Prince Tazeem Mohammed. But mostly...
Or Eubank jumping into the ring.
Or Eubank senior, yes. People don't remember you for your ring walk. They remember you for your performance in the ring. This is what I said to my guys who fight for me. What do you think I should get shorts? What boots should I wear? It's like no one's bothered what boots you're wearing. Everyone cares about your performance. Not if you win or lose, about your performance. That's what they're bothered about. And if you've trained hard, doesn't matter if you're wearing a leopard print thong. As long as you perform to the best of your ability and you are happy with yourself in that ring, it's fine.
I only found out recently, because obviously you've only had one fight, that you are the Jackal. That's your nickname.
That's a new one. I didn't have a nickname for the first fight.
No, how's that come about?
I've never bothered with nicknames. Me and Sam, my coach, were just chatting and he said, you need a name. Like, everyone's got a name. I'm like, well, think of something then. It's like, I'm not doing it. I'm not bothered. And then, like I said to you when we was at James Kennelly's gym, when you see my logo, you'll see that it makes sense, because the J&C and Jackal fit with John Collier. You know, it kind of fits. I like it because Carl Frampton was the Jackal, and he was a well respected fighter in his day. So if I can be compared to Carl Frampton in one way, if it's just the name, then that'll do.
Some people have nicknames, some don't, and it ain't going to make any difference to how you fight.
No one cares about it. That's just the point I've just been making. No one cares about your name. No one cares about your boots, your shorts, your ring walk. They care about your performance, now how well you perform. And as long as you believe you perform to the best of your ability, that is absolutely fine. You can look yourself in the mirror when you go back to the changing rooms, win or lose, and think, I did the best I could. That's all that matters.
You can only be the best version of yourself, can't you? You can't be.
Correct. No one's better at being you than you.
There's a question. I mean, and it's always a difficult question to ask any fighter ahead of a fight.
Okay.
But were you to lose, and I know you're confident about winning, but were you to lose, would you be ready for the next fight, or would you walk away? What sort of fighter are you?
I think these fighters who say, I don't even think about losing, nonsense. Absolute nonsense. You have to consider losing because that's what makes you train harder. If you believe you're going to win, you know, after this Zoom, I'm going to make something to eat, have a brew, I'm going to head up to the gym and go for a run. If I think, I'm going to win anyway, I'll just pick the guitar up and make a brew. Have a box of Jaffa cakes and a couple of Pringles. But, you know, if I think I'm going to win so much, I'll come home and have a bar of Cadbury's Dairy Milk rather than a protein shake and a bit of fruit. Not so much the fear of losing, because it's nothing to be scared of as long as you've done your best, but the thought of losing has to inspire you to get out and run an extra kilometre or do an extra set of sprints on the steps. So if I was to lose, which is, it's a distinct possibility, because Aaron hits bloody hard, do you know what I mean? Aaron's a strong guy, he's a determined guy, and he hits hard. So if I was to lose, I'm not the kind of guy to give up on dreams. If I'm not good enough to be world champion, then I'm not good enough to be world champion. But at least I went down swinging, as the boxer saying goes, give it a go. And so I'll have Christmas off, and I'd get really fat, and then I'd get back in the gym in January and go thin again.
I suppose really you're the sort then that you leave nothing to chance, so you're never going to leave the ring with any regrets, are you?
No, I never. I always... Like when I fought Luca, I did what I needed to do to win. There's a lot more in the tank than that. And I mean that respectfully to Luca, but I won comfortably 2-1 just by doing exactly what I needed.
It's actually better to come from John Collier.
Yeah, there's loads more. There's loads more to come. That was my first fight in 2.5 years. So I was still setting, as much as I've been sparring regular, you know, I sparred once a week all through my retirement. You know what I mean? But that was my first time in 2.5 years under competitive lights. So that's a little bit different. My first time ever under bare-knuckle rules, you know, bare-knuckle discipline. But there's still more. There's a lot more. I'll fight this fight different than I fought the last one.
Wow. You ever sit at, you know, when you've got your guitar and you're sitting and you're a bit on your own, as you are sometimes, do you ever sit and think, why didn't I have a go at the pro game properly?
No, because I'm at peace with myself knowing that I tested myself against pros in sparring and I wasn't good enough. If I hadn't done that, maybe. You know, I sparred with a pro guy for me leading up to the Luka Zebets fight and he absolutely battered me around the ring. You know what I mean? It was a 6-round spar and I might have won a round and he started coming on strong towards the end of the fight, which is what them pros do. So I'm at peace with my ability. You know, I'm at peace with myself knowing that I didn't need to give the pro game a go because I've only been an opponent anyway. So, and I don't need money that much. not insinuating that I'm well off. I'm a working class guy in the north of England, but I don't need 1,200 quid enough to go and get laid out by an ex-ABA champion who's on his way up through Eddie Hearn's stable.
Who do you like watching, BKB? Who do you like watching?
The old faithful, Sean George. I'm lucky, I have Sean on Facebook, so I see a lot of his memories come up, so he shares a lot of videos and stuff of his old fights and stuff. Sean was always really good to watch. His fight with Tyler Goodjohn is one of the best fights I've ever seen. Yeah. Ever. Right. He loved boxing. Going back 25 years when I started watching this sport, that fight is one of the best fights I've ever seen.
Right.
Brilliant. It was a really good fight.
Is there a fighter you think I'd love a crack at him? At your weight?
It's not fighters I want to crack at, Tom. It's the belts. It's the accolades I want. So whoever's got the belt at the time of me making my way through to that belt, that's who I'll fight.
So the belt's the driving force?
Yeah, the belt. It's not, you know, everyone I've met so far in BKB, sparred with, been involved with, sat and had a coffee with, has been really nice, really pleasant, respectful guys. So there's nobody who's knocking around my way who's been staring at me over the weighing and stuff like that. You know, there's no, I've no beef with anyone, so there's no one I'd like a crack at. But whoever's got the belt is the best, and I want to fight the best.
December the 3rd, do you have a particular cut-off time with your training camp? Is it all planned meticulously so that... Because the idea of any training camp for any sport is that you're at your maximum best on the day of the fight.
Yes, I've just... After the Luka fight, I had a week off, and then I got back in the gym on takeover training. And I've just done 5 hard weeks. And then last week I had a little, not a lazy week because I ran every day, but I had a week off pads and a week off boxing, really. Just did a bit of running and a little bit of strength and conditioning. My coach was busy anyway, so he couldn't get into the gym. So I said, right, well, you have the entire week off then. I'll just do my running and my strength and conditioning. Just give me brain a rest from boxing, but we're back at it full chat for 4 weeks, and then we've got a week tapering off.
You're a coach, a respected coach. What about your coach? Do you respect him? Do you listen to him? Because you're a coach.
Yeah, I love Sam. He's one of my oldest friends in boxing. He came up with me. This is going to sound like it's a massive advantage to people, but it's not. Sam only started boxing with me about 7 or 8 years ago. So we formed it. He learned what he knows about boxing from me.
Yeah.
And then, but I think I said this to you in a previous interview we've done, Tom. It's another set of eyes. I can't see everything. I might, respectfully to Sam, I might know a lot more than Sam, but I can't say it to myself from the outside of the ring. Do you know what I mean? So he learns a lot from me. All this pad work and everything he's learned from me, stuff like that. So now he's just taking over the role. He was just kind of my pad man at first when I was keeping fit. And I just said, well, it looks like you're a head coach now, mate. So
you listen to him?
Yeah, of course I do. Yeah, of course I do. Because like I said, he can see things that I can't see. You know, when I'm sparring with lads, he's like, move to your left, move to your right, throw your jab. He's wide open for the right hand, stuff like that. I can't see that in the competitive scenario. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, you have to listen to your corner. Any fighter should listen to the corner. Any fighter. And you have to respect your corner as well. And I respect him for his boxing knowledge. And I respect him as a person as well, enough to listen to him.
Fantastic. I said at the start, this is a fight I know that me and Robin Reed will be looking forward to, and Robin Black, we can't wait, because it has all the ingredients to be the fight of the night. And there are other title fights, great fights. It's mind-blowing, the bill on December the 3rd, O2 Arena. If you can't get a ticket to come and see this guy, trust me, try your best. And if not, pay-per-view, fight.tv. John Colley is the name. John, it's always a pleasure talking to you, mate.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Thanks for joining us on this this podcast. Thanks very much indeed. Folks, if you've enjoyed what you've heard from John, etc., leave us a review on your normal platform. Leave us a review, what you thought about the podcast. Good, bad, or indifferent, we always know and always like to improve. Thanks very much indeed. Until next week, we'll see you soon.